That's a little dance move I like to call the funky monkey. Sorry about that. Hey, thank you and welcome to Caching in the Northwest. Did you know this is the only podcast dedicated to geocaching in the great Pacific Northwest? We're going to talk about caches and cachers unique to this little corner of the continent. So while you're wondering why you paid someone to lock you in an escape room, we'll be caching in the Northwest. And you know we can't do that until we bring in our low-maintenance monkey. Some say he finds it hard to believe that everybody was kung fu fighting. And others say he has played 18 holes of golf in just 15 strokes. All we know is he's called Land Monkey.
Hey, well, I can tell you that game of golf was as fast as lightning. It was a little bit frightening, but yeah. You know.
But you played with expert timing.
I did my best. All right. So it is Thursday night. It's great to be with you again, my friend. I missed out last week. I was on a hashtag geocache road trip, but it was a lot of fun. I see we've got some folks popping into the chat, which is awesome. Good to see you guys there, Keats and Subway Mark. I want to just take a quick opportunity, as I do at the beginning of the show each week, to thank our patrons, everybody who helps support the show each and every week. If you want to know more about the Patreon system and how to help support the show, click the Patreon link on the cachingnw.com website. Now, you may have noticed that Jim and I have traded off. So this week we have no Wits End and I'm back in. So I don't know if we're at some sort of critical mass. We can only have two hosts at a time. Or...
You know, it sometimes works out that way. I think that's the real benefit of the three host system.
It is helpful. It allows the host to actually have a life as well as podcast.
Or in your case, be able to geocache.
A lot. Yeah.
It doesn't right. work for me for some reason. I don't get to geocache, but you know, I've heard that other people can.
It happens. It happens out there every once in a while. Hey, so this week we are going to talk about cache maintenance. So getting out there and doing the maintenance on your cache. Folks, we encourage you to share your thoughts in the chat about what you do or wish you could do or wish other people would do around cache maintenance. That would be great. We look forward to seeing what you guys have to share. In the meantime, I did want to quickly address a topic we've heard a fair bit about lately. There's been some concern about our podcast and that on the podcast feeds, that's iTunes and Stitcher, et cetera, that there's been no new episodes for quite a while. And we are aware of that. And no one's blaming anybody. We're not pointing anybody out. But what we are doing is Chris and I are collaborating for me to take some tasks away and to work on that this weekend and start getting us caught up starting this weekend. So thank you folks for your patience and your continued support as we get things back on track.
Yes. And Mr. Monkey, I want to say thank you. This family difficult time that I've been through has taken a lot more out of me than I expected it would. I thought, no, I can do this. And, it's not worked out that way. And I need to learn to ask for help. So that's what I'm doing.
It's okay to ask for help sometimes. So, friends.
Exactly. Folks, stick with us. We're still here. We're not going anywhere. Mainly because I don't have enough money for gas. Have you seen the price of gas keeps inching up?
Oh, come up in my neck of the woods. Oh, it's not inching up. It's kilometering up.
It's getting expensive.
Yeah.
But you know what's still free?
What's free?
Good logs.
Ooh.
You know, the geocaching log of the week or the glow, those are still free. You can go and write a glow right now. And we'll read it here on the podcast. In fact, we want you to go out and write a glow and submit it. We need more glows. We read one of these a week. And you know what? Our stockpile gets a little low. It's like directly inverse to the price of gasoline. As gasoline goes up in price, our stockpile of glows go down because I don't think people go out and go caching as much.
Ah, it's a direct inverse relationship.
Exactly. So, folks, we need you to send in your glow. Send that to feedback@cashingnw.com. Better yet, call into 253-693-TFTC and read the glow in your very own, I was going to say your very own language, but you could do that, or your very own voice.
I mean, you could do it in Klingon or Vogon or, you know, whatever language works for you. So
I'm partial to English.
Yeah.
English I'm works for passable us. In French.
Hey, so here's the big question. With no Wits End tonight, who is going to cold read the glow?
I don't know, because I've already pre-read the glow in an effort to make it come out somewhat on par with the way Wits End can cold read a glow.
All right. So you're going to take a crack at it then?
Yeah, I got it.
Okay, buddy.
This is from our good friend Limax. He found Dreams of Flight. This is cache 1968. How often can you say that you found a cache corresponding to your birth year on your birthday? I was out on my traditional birthday geocache adventure, and I decided that Pleasanton Ridge was my goal this year. My story with this puzzle cache began exactly 2 years ago. I had decided in 2015 to hike Pleasanton Ridge for my birthday, but I saw there were two puzzles there that I had not yet solved, this being one of them and the other being Venn diagram. So I figured I would solve them right quick and be on my way. 3 hours later, in the same coffee shop, I still hadn't managed to solve either one of them. This one was particularly meaningful to me since my father is a pilot. I knew everything being discussed in the description. I had actually watched my dad navigate via VOR. I had discussed this problem with my father, and neither of us could make headway with it. I started discussing this with a former solver friend, and he led me to the documentation that he used to solve the puzzle. It was a great challenge for me, since I hadn't done a lot of Python programming, but soon I had a set of tools that I could use to solve this particular puzzle. I finally solved it in early mid-2016, but had no opportunity to make it up here until today. This was the first cache that I went after when I left the parking lot, and I found Ground Zero without a problem, but that's where the trouble began. I searched quite a bit around the area and could not spot it. There was a limb nearby that had apparently fallen during the drought we had the last couple of years. There were still leaves on the branches, and I was beginning to wonder if the cache had been crushed when it fell. I kept searching, and my GPS was jumping around a lot. So I ended up searching a wide area around where I thought Ground Zero was. Finally, in desperation, I decided to check out something up the hill that I had spotted when I first got there and had dismissed. When I went over to it, I found it was the cache, and it appears that if someone had found it, tossed it up the hill. I was quite happy to finally find this one after a lot of searching, and it was also a valuable lesson learned. I put the cache back in a more safe location and messaged the owner where I had put it. Thanks for the great puzzle and the great adventure. And, you know, I think that fits right into the theme for this week, maintenance.
Cache maintenance. Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm.
Now, we do have one more. Well, we have a couple of interesting things to talk about before we get into the meat of tonight's topics.
Meat. I like meat.
Oh, sorry. I was looking and going, oh, maybe I do have a problem with my audio feed. That's from you, Land Monkey. What are you doing typing in the chat? You can't do that.
Well, I'm trying to get some real-time feedback from our live listeners to see if it's just me who's having trouble hearing you or if it's everybody.
I sound like a robot.
Ooh.
I am sorry for that.
Is that an upgrade?
I think it is.
There you go.
Anyway.
All right.
Well, oh, no, you have a story.
I want to take this story because it's a story about Canada. And I like talking about the stories about Canada. All right. So this is, might be news to some people. This is something that's been in the works for a long time. And I've talked about it before on the podcast, but I was really excited to find out via Twitter today that it's actually going live. It's called Alert Canada. Alert Ready Canada. Alert Ready Canada is it's designed to deliver critical and potentially life-saving alerts to Canadians through television and radio and through your mobile phones. The Alert Ready system is developed in partnership with federal, provincial, and territorial emergency management officials, Environment and Climate Change Canada, the Weather Network, and the broadcasting industry, and the wireless service providers. to ensure that you receive alerts immediately and know when to take action to keep yourself and your family safe. So folks, if you remember the story in the U.S. about when the folks in Hawaii got the messages on their cell phones that said incoming missile alert, it's that kind of system that we will now have in Canada that we have not had until very recently. So if you want to find out more, it's www.alertready.ca. Now, there's a specific tone you'll hear on television radio or your wireless device. And they say, if you hear that tone, please pay attention and take action right away. I will describe it as a super obnoxious alternating white noise beep. But you know what? Here's what I'm going to do. This is a test of the emergency broadcast system. This is only a test. If you hear this tone, I can't remember how that goes. How does that go when you do that? Anyways, you know what?
Shelter immediately. Take cover immediately.
Something like that. So I'm going to play the tone so you can hear what it sounds like. I am playing a test of the tone. There are no incoming missiles at this moment. There you go. So that's the tone.
I like that. Do it again.
Was that obnoxious enough for you? No, I don't think I'm going to do it again.
Oh, man. Okay.
But there you go. So Canadians and folks visiting Canada, we now have that system. So which is really important because especially out here on the West Coast, we have a lot of earthquakes and we have the potential for tsunamis. And in the past, what you've had to do is be hooked up to the Twitter feed for the tsunami warnings and hope that your phone wakes you up at 2 a.m. if there's a tsunami coming in the next hour. So this is a much better system.
Wow.
There you go.
I really want to know if the tsunami is coming.
It's a good thing to know. All right.
Gionafro says that reminds him of a game from the 80s.
It does have that that old 8-bit video gaming audio quality. But the intent is it's a simple tone to transmit over any media, and it's going to be identifiable immediately that this isn't, just static or something like that. So it's cool.
No, it's identifiable, like the Donkey Kong or Mario theme. Immediately identifiable.
Yeah, exactly. Subway Mark wants to know, what about zombies? I believe zombie apocalypse would also be a trigger for an emergency broadcast system. Or Alert Ready Canada if it's a Canadian zombie problem.
But the Canadian zombies are just so polite.
Yeah.
And all they want is donuts.
I thought it was going to be poutine instead of brains.
Oh, yeah, there you go. That's a really good one. Yeah.
There you go. All right. Okay. So
back in the real world.
Alert Ready Canada. Alertready.ca.
No, very good. Go sign up for it. No, you don't have to sign
you
up.
Don't have, this is the beauty. You don't have to sign up for it. But go to the website, check it out, and inform yourself.
So you're saying it's foisted upon you whether you want to sign up for it or not.
To your cell phones, yes, but if you're not sure if your carrier supports the system yet, they actually have a link on the website, on the alertready.ca website, where you can pull down and see if your carrier supports it.
Nice. Hey, we got some email this week. In episode 243, there was a discussion about a late or 15 to 20 T5 kayak caches. And Hide Go Seek wanted to let us know that there's an event near, I'm going to go with Elb Lake, E-E-L. Eel?
Well, that's what I would say. Two E's and an L, the word eel.
Sorry. Yeah, my brain's not working. It's Eel Lake.
That's why they pay me the big bucks on this podcast.
Yeah. Eel Lake. It's a great name for a lake. Love Eel Lake. At Tugman State Park, about 30 miles south of Honeyman, usually consists of around 60 kayak caches that are renewed every year in advance of the Spank Me, Paddle Me, Get Me in a Yak event in August.
Nice.
Now, you want to go to the Spank Me, Paddle Me, Get Me in a Yak event just to say, I was there.
Sign me up.
Camping, kayaking, caching, and lots of food makes this a must-do event. So there you go. Thank you, Hide Go Seek, for that. I've never officially done a kayak cache, so getting 60, that might be worth a weekend trip.
That's a heck of a paddle. I mean, if you think about it, so if they have to be a minimum of 163, whatever it is, meters apart from each other, 500 feet apart from each other, that could be a fair bit of paddling to get 60 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'll guarantee they're not all 162.5 meters from each other. Well, I'm not going to do that, but I'm going to make an educated guess. That's cool. That's cool.
I'm sorry, Breiling. I don't have a date or a GC code for that. I was really hoping that the research department, Breiling, would be able to come up with something.
There you go. And the number is 161 meters. Thank you, research department. All right. Hey, we've got some other news that we want to share. And this is to let you guys know there's a contest coming. And we're in conjunction with fixing the feed, we're going to get a contest out there. So what the contest is, we will announce through this coming week. And we'll announce it on social media through this coming week. And then we'll also talk about it on the next podcast. But we want to thank Subway Mark for donating the prizes for this contest. So our friend, yes, clap, clap, clap. Thank you very much, Subway Mark. Our friend Subway Mark has donated two $25 gift certificates from Gold Country in BC that are good at several businesses up in Gold Country. The catch here, now pay attention, is they expire May 31st. So that's why we're going to run the contest as soon as we can to make sure that whoever wins has the opportunity to get their butts up to Gold Country before May 31st and make use of these coupons, these gift certificates. Subway Mark is not able to get up there in time to use them. So he came up with the idea of using them as a prize for us and donating them to the podcast as a prize. So you know what? Thank you so much, Subway Mark. That's really generous of you. And I'm sure whoever wins it will be very appreciative. For a listing of what businesses that you can use them at, check out the website, exploregoldcountry.com/contest. And I think Chris is going to post that into the chat right now.
How did you know?
Because I saw you highlight it. I figured that's what I do. So I won't read all the businesses because there's a whole bunch of businesses in here, but it's everything from guest ranches and B&Bs to markets and looks like tour companies and gift shops and food shops and all kinds of stuff. So great options. Oh, hey, the Junction Coffee House in Clinton, BC is in there. I've been there. That's a good place. All right.
Where did we have lunch that day?
That was in
Bridge. Something
Spence's Bridge. And I don't see them on this list, but it doesn't mean they're not. Anyways.
You could get a Monte Cristo there. I'm just saying.
That was pretty good. Okay. All right. So there you go. If you're watching live, head on over into the chat. And Chris has posted the exploregoldcountry.com/contest. And if you're not listening live, it's exploregoldcountry.com/contest. And I think if you're watching the video feed after the fact, the chat actually is linked with the video feed now. It's a new YouTube thing, which is super cool.
It is super cool. And you don't get to peek ahead. You have to wait then to see what people are going to say.
Ooh, so suspense and excitement.
Oh, it is. It is. Do you know what we appreciate?
What?
You know what? In fact, I've got a little chant here.
Ooh.
You ready?
Yes.
2, 4, 6, 8. What do we appreciate? Milestones, milestones. Yes, milestones.
It sounds like somebody's got a milestone.
We think. This comes from Monkey Kicks, reporting milestone fine for 2,468. That's 2,468.
Nice. I like it.
On a GC68 November Kilo Yankee, in the memory of hidden unused jewels.
That's an interesting name for a cache.
Hidden unused. Yeah.
What's a used jewel? Like, what do you
mean? It's not hidden. It's out in the open used jewel. I mean, you know, nobody wants the used jewels. They want the unused jewels. That's not my jewel mint in box.
That's what I'm trying to figure out. All right.
I get it. That the link doesn't work.
Oh, I think Derek's got it. I think you have to have the www in front.
Okay.
So there you go. So if you're listening to the podcast, www.exploregoldcountry.com/contest. All right. Thank you very much, GeoNav Pros and Brightline, for helping us sort that out. All right. That's the way Mark says, good luck to everyone who enters.
That's right. I mean, we're talking $50 worth of goods in Gold Country.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong with that.
Heck, okay. You could even buy gold.
You could buy some real gold. You wouldn't be able to buy a Bitcoin with it.
No. A bit of Bitcoin.
A bit of Bitcoin.
All right.
Okay, Monkey.
What?
Enough of that. Let's talk about what we actually are here to talk about tonight, and that is cash maintenance planning. First off, do you actually plan or do you react?
Well, that's a good question. I probably don't plan as often as I should to do cash maintenance. But I certainly try and get on top of the maintenance before I get, you know, some sort of dire notice from the reviewers telling me that it's time. So the longer I've been caching for, the fewer reviewer notes I get, which is good because I do try and be reasonably proactive. But, you know, sometimes things happen and a cache breaks and you don't know about it until you see a couple of DNFs or somebody logs that it's broken, and then you disable it and go out and fix it and such. But yeah, you know, do I have planned and organized maintenance runs? For the caches near my home, yes. But for the ones where it's a bit more of a travel, not quite that structured.
No, I understand that. And I agree with you. I will definitely go out there after a couple of DNFs. And, you know, there are times that you need to go out and get things ready. In fact, Wendy Crandall from Facebook says she's got things on a schedule, and I like this. I refresh nearly all of my caches every spring in preparation for geocaching season. Currently about halfway done. So there you have that. And Dave Manning from Facebook says, I take it about twice a year.
There you go.
So I would think spring and summer. You know, it depends on where the cache is, how often it's found.
Right. Hey, I'm going to throw in there one more that just saw shared on Facebook. It's from our friend, the Aussie geocacher, C. Michelle. He said, I maintain after a DNF or if it hasn't been found in a while. So if it hasn't been found in a while, he goes and does maintenance. That's pretty good. I don't think a lot of people necessarily do that.
No, that is very good because, you know, again, it depends on where the cache is, right? If it's a cache that's very seasonal. Well, I took my son up to skiing lessons. He took 3 skiing lessons, and I was up there for Snoqualmie Pass.
Okay.
For 3 weeks, and it was very frustrating to see a geocache within, you know, a couple hundred feet of me, but it was under 4 feet of snow.
Yeah.
You know, on a display of some sort, and you know, I'm post-holing to get there, and I'm like, no, I'm not going to dig this out. It's going to be a little too obvious, but you know, so one of those, that's not going to be found for several months.
Yeah, good point. Cool. So you know, I talked about the messages that we get from reviewers, and I've heard in the past how this works, but I for the life of me could not remember exactly how it works, but there's a system where the reviewers will get information after a period of time to send out their dire warnings. And maybe the research department can fill us in the chat about how that all works. And then we can share that on the podcast a little bit later in the show.
Bryling's not cutting me any slack. He says, didn't you pack a shovel? Well, yes, but it would have been incredibly obvious that I was doing something, you know, it was within sight of the lodge, and yeah, I didn't feel comfortable.
So it was less about not having the right equipment and more about not digging a hole in the snow in front of muggles.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dora Moore says, I had to do an unexpected checkup on one of mine after discovering after the fact that it was in a park that was home to the a large community Easter egg hunt. So somebody got something a little more than an Easter egg.
Yeah. Imagine if your cache was an Easter egg.
Exactly.
That would have been so confusing. Mommy, mommy, this candy tastes like paper. This candy tastes like wet, old paper.
I got moldy paper. Keats says, I tend to have spare caches. So when I happen to be near a cache of mine, I will check on it. I can imagine maintaining a power trail is much easier. Or it could be much harder. You know, I mean, a power trail, you've got to stop it. What's the minimum of a power trail these days? 50? 100?
Oh, like what you would consider a power trail based on number of caches? I don't think there's a, I think it's an arbitrary decision of it could be 25. I don't know.
But, you know,
depends how many you really want for that day. That's how long a power trail is.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, something like the ET power trail, they kind of do self-maintenance every time they go out because, you know, they take a bunch of the containers and just replace them. So,
yeah, we'll talk about that a little later in the, this episode. But yeah. So that takes us to the next question, which is what would you bring with you to do a maintenance run? And, you know, Keats had said that he happens to carry spare caches. You know, log sheets, Ziploc bag, or, you know, the little mini pill Ziploc bags, entirely new containers. Like if you're heading out on a caching run, or a maintenance run, like, so intentionally going out to do maintenance to go check on one of your caches, what are you going to bring with you?
You know, I can't say exactly because it truly does depend on the cache itself and what is in the description, if any, of the previous logger finder. So is it simply a wet log? Well, then maybe a new bag and a new log. Does it say the top is missing to the container? Well, then you need a whole new container and probably a new bag and a new log. So it really depends, you know. Now, if they say they can't find it, yeah, I'm going to go out with another container and get ready to replace it. So I'm bumping the microphone. It really is. Well, it depends.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, I have some caches out that are very simple caches, and I have some that are more complex. And for the more complex ones, what I will do is if I think based on the logs that something smells fishy with it, I'll disable it. And then I'll go out and I'll usually retrieve the cache and bring it home. So what I go out with is a pair of snips because my intention is I'm just going to bring this home and it's going to need fixing. So, you know, if it's somehow fallen apart or been broken or something's jammed or whatever it is, then very rarely am I going to be able to do field maintenance. I'm probably going to need my tools in my workshop and it's going to be
so work. You disable it before you check on it?
It depends. It depends on what the logs are that are prompting me to go check on it.
Mm-hmm.
If the logs are, you know, really explicitly your cache is busted, I found it in pieces, then yeah, I will disable it. But if it's, you know, it's kind of like, oh, okay, it sounds like someone's having a little bit of trouble with it, I'll go look at it first because maybe I can, you know, maybe they just a piece fell off or something and it's just to put it back together. But yeah, there you go.
Nice. So, yeah. Well, what do you think? When should a log be maintained or a cache be maintained?
Oh, like ideal time of year?
Well, sure. Let's start with that.
Okay. You had a thought there on that, Chris?
Well, I was thinking, you know, it was already mentioned earlier that spring is an ideal time of year for some cache maintenance because you know, perhaps the log is wet over the winter, or, you know, containers damaged from repeated freezing and thawing. So spring is a great time, because that's really when I think all the not the heavy duty cachers, the light duty, the recreational cachers get out. Oh, weather's getting good. Let's go out and go on a hike. Oh, let's do this geocaching thing again. So you give them a good experience. In this area, we have cache machines. Now, that's something that you and I know about. If you're new to caching in the Northwest, or actually going caching in the Northwest, not just the podcast, but the actual activity, a cache machine is a coordinated tour of caches in a city or, you know, area, depending on the size. You know, it could be one city, it could be three or four cities, smaller cities in an area. And, you know, they usually have well over 100 caches on the cache machine. You may not be able to get them all, especially in the winter months when it's shorter daylight. But, you know, you could have 100 or more finders on your cache if you want it to be in that cache machine. So, good time to do maintenance is right before and right after. You want to go put a new in. You probably want to go change that log after the weekend.
There you go.
We've also got several large mega events coming up this summer. You know, again, be a good idea to do maintenance maybe a month, at least a week before the big events, and then do some right after.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. We had some feedback again from Facebook. The reason we have feedback on Facebook is I posed a question on Facebook, and then the caching in the NW account reposted it. And some of you guys were awesome. You were right on top of it and gave us some feedback. And so Tick Magnet from Facebook said, I try to get, so we're talking about when the maintenance is done. It says, I try to get to them a couple times a year. And if cachers send me a message asking me to get them or to check them, and if I get DNFs on easy ones. So yeah, I think if you know your cache is pretty easy and you're getting some DNFs on it, probably needs an eye on it. Tick Magnet continues to say, our reviewer is a good friend, so I would hate to put him in the position of having to send me that message. There you go. We also heard from Daryl Voiken. He said, our Gladiator urban roadside hides are checked on quite regularly. Our mountain top caches usually only get checked on once a dirt biking or quadding season, unless he gets a needs maintenance log, and then he'll try and get there when time permits.
Nice. I'm looking at the chat, because you know what? They're going to talk about the same thing we want to talk about next.
Okay.
Is it okay to do maintenance, or have other people do maintenance for you, or you do maintenance for other people? Brian Lang asks, do you replace caches without permission?
Right. So, well, so there's two ways of looking at this, and it depends how you ask the question. So, the way we originally were going to ask the question in the script is it okay to ask others to do maintenance for you, which is, I think, a little more of a gray area. So the other way of looking at that question is it okay to do maintenance on somebody's cache without them asking? And I think it's okay to do a certain amount of maintenance, but actually replacing the cache is a whole, you know, at that point, You're sort of crossing the line there.
Yeah, I can see that. So Brian Lang says, if you replace a cache without permission, technically it's a throwdown and your log is subject to deletion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is, so then that's at the cache owner's discretion, I believe. I don't think the reviewers would be deleting logs on throwdowns. I don't know how that would work, but I mean, I guess if we're going to play devil's advocate a little bit, question is, what if the owner of the cache isn't active anymore And it's a cache that you want to get the smiley for. Are you going to drop a replacement so that you can have the smiley? Or are you going to log the DNF so that the cache will eventually get archived? So you have to take one for the team to clear the spot. Because if you don't and you drop a replacement, that spot will continue to be taken with whatever it is you dropped there, which is probably, you know, just going to be a pill bottle.
Average at best.
Yeah.
You know, that's a tough call because, okay, let me throw a monkey wrench into it. I chose that term specifically. Yeah. What if you're with a previous finder and they say, oh, it was right over here and now it's missing?
Again, I think the rules still apply, right? I mean, if you don't have actual permission from the CO to replace it, technically it's a throwdown. And so then we're going into that area. If you've contacted, if you've seen a string of DNFs, and before you went on the hike, you contacted the CO, they're still active in the game. You said, hey, I'm going to go check on your cache because it's on the trail I'm going to do. If I can't find it, do I have your permission to drop a replacement? I think that's now a whole different conversation.
Mm-hmm. Now you've been duly deputized by this cache owner to go out and make the replacement.
That's what I think.
Mm-hmm.
So Brylang in the chat says, if the CO is inactive, so back to our earlier case we were talking about, that if the cache owner is not active in the game and the cache is not physically there, post a needs archived. Wow, I rarely do is post a needs archived on a cache. So I don't know. I think I would tend to take a DNF before I would post a needs archived, but I don't know. I guess it depends on the scenario. Usually I don't know if the cache owner is inactive before I go out because I cache by GPS, I don't log until I get home.
Right. I would agree with that. You know, if it's a lonely cache, if you're targeting a cache or a trail and that cache is on it, then you can kind of look ahead and say, oh, you know what? This one hasn't been found in a while. Oh, look, the cache owner hasn't been found in a while. Or has it found in a while? How's that?
There you go.
Then, yeah, we can say, well, perhaps this needs to be archived. I agree with Brylang. Don't just keep the cache going because. Now, what if it's one you need for a challenge? You know, the cache owner is no longer active. Do you have, I'm going to use this term, do you have the right to adopt that cache, not legally, but in a supportive manner to keep it going?
You can't adopt a cache unless the CO is active, because the CO has to push a button, basically, right, to have you adopt the cache. So if the CO isn't active in the game, you can't adopt the cache anymore. So that means basically that cache is going to get archived at some point, one way or another.
Do the reviewers know when a CO is not active to archive a cache, or is it just when the cache cannot be found anymore?
I don't think COs know, I don't think reviewers know when COs are not active anymore any different than the rest of us would. I don't think they have any special tools that we don't. Like, I don't think they, you know, spy on your webcam on your laptop to check your key loggers and see if you've been logging into the site. I think they do the same thing anybody else would do, which is go onto the site for the profile of the CO and see when's the last time they logged into the site. And if it's a year or longer or whatever, then it's like, okay, this guy's not playing the game. They're not active. They get sent the 1 month warning email. It says you got 30 days to either respond or do something. Or you're casually going to get archived. So I think by doing those two actions, it's pretty fair opportunity for people to prove that they're still active in the game. Because even if you haven't cached for a year, all of a sudden an email pops in your inbox and says, hey, you got 30 days. You can reply back and say, oh, crap, no, I haven't been out for a little while. Or you can say, yeah, you know what, whatever, I'm done.
That was so 2015. Subway Mark says, I've had cashiers ask me if it was okay to put down a new container for me, which I was happy since I knew the cash was missing.
Well, and there you go. I think that's totally legit. If the people who are going to do the trail that your cash is on and you know that they're going to replace it with a similar container, then that's fine. I noticed earlier in the chat, NavPros had something. Where was it? Oh, said, people keep taking the rubber bat from my cache. So I grabbed it, took it home, added a new one, and took it back all within an hour. And he's asking if I would disable the cache for that. If you're doing it within an hour, then probably I wouldn't bother disabling it. If you're doing it, but you're taking a risk, right? If you do that and somebody shows up during that hour, you're not there. They're going to log a DNF and you're now going to have a DNF on your cache. So, if you're okay with taking that risk, then go for it. But if your cache is a pretty popular one, or if it's in a location where it's sort of a high traffic volume, or if the time that you're taking it is a Saturday afternoon, probably I would disable it before I did that. But if you're doing it like a late night on a Tuesday or something, then that's probably fine. I don't know. You takes your chances.
Thanks, Popeye.
Yeah, I can't do my impersonations too well when I have a cold.
Oh. We've talked about a lot of different things. This whole needs archive thing, it keeps coming up, especially on this podcast, and I don't know why. What if someone posts a needs archive log simply because they cannot find your cache? Now, this is a real case that happened to one of our loyal listeners. He quickly replied that he would check on it as soon as he could. And Witsend, the wonderful gentleman that he is, found it the very next day, right where it should be. So,
yeah.
This is a tough one to get a good take on. You get a needs archive log that brings up a lot of, I'm going to use the term emotion. It brings up a lot of emotion in the cache owner that, oh man, it's gone. I've got to get out there and.
Yeah. I said earlier, I really hesitate to use needs archive. And it's for that exact reason. It's like, I don't know. It's like the most dramatic thing you can do in geocaching is post a needs archive. And yeah. I don't know. Does it need to be? I guess not. But I mean, it's one of those things where you're really, yeah. I would just avoid using it unless you absolutely have to. So I think in that scenario that you were describing, Chris, that and I'm familiar with that story. The fault was on behalf of the person who should have logged a DNF, not a needs archive. You log a needs archive if there's like something really wrong with the location. So, if the cache is hanging on a fence outside of an elementary school, if the cache is, on the side of an active railroad track or something something really dramatically, like, how did the reviewers let this get published? Okay.
Or construction has changed the area.
Fair enough, right? So there's a lot of legitimate reasons where you could use a needs archive, but I mean, you got to understand what it's for before you go ahead and use it. So, I got carried away with that. What was the question?
Is Witsend a gentleman for going out and finding the cache the very next day?
Yes.
Okay.
Did he respond in a gentlemanly manner?
it was very interesting that the way the cache logs read on this particular hide. But so be careful with your needs archive logs. They are powerful tools, and they elicit response from the cache owner, from reviewers, and all of that. Subway Mark says, I got a, there you go. I had a cashier put a nasty needs archive on a cache because they were upset that I was able to place a cache in the location, but they were turned down by the reviewer. So that's not really a reason for needs archived. That may be difference between reviewers, or that, you know, perhaps Subway Mark was able to better communicate with the reviewer about where it was going to be hidden.
Or maybe Subway Mark is the reviewer's favorite. He can do what he wants.
Well, there's that. And why wouldn't he be? He goes on to say, it got nasty. I worked with the reviewer to place the cache. The mad cacher had not. It was close to a light rail line, but along a trail with a high fence protecting folks from the train.
There you go. All right. So it sounds, from what I'm reading or what I'm hearing in that Subway Mark actually explained the situation to the reviewer around the cache placements to help them understand why it's not a violation of the geocaching rules, and perhaps the mad cacher.
Ooh, let's just call him that. The mad cacher.
Had not provided any explanation and just given the coordinates. And when the reviewer, you know, you got to keep in mind, the reviewer is going to look at a map and they might not be familiar with that specific area. They're going to look at a map and they're not going to necessarily see a fence line, but they're going to see a cache that's too proximate to a light rail line and go, yeah, I'm sorry, that's not an approvable location. So you gotta work with your reviewers, folks. They're not all mean, nasty people.
There you go. And the end of the story, did you see how Subway Mark did an introduction, the body, and now has an ending to the story, very well structured? He says the cache was far enough and safely away from the line, but due to the nasty logs, I archived it.
Oh, that's unfortunate he had to do that. But yeah, that's, that's the thing as well, right? With a community game like this, that sometimes people post logs that, come on, guys, give your heads a shake.
Exactly. Keith says, photos are your friends when submitting the cache.
Really good advice, Keith. Absolutely.
Really good advice. Yeah. You know, we should do another show on hiding or placing a cache and going through the submission process.
Absolutely. Well, you know what? I'll give you a heads up. We're planning shows out through the summer. And what we're going to do is we're going to walk through a whole series of it. We'll spread them out a little bit. We'll walk through a whole series of episodes about getting people oriented and introduced to the game. So if you've just joined our podcast, you haven't listened to it before, and we're getting into, you know, having debates about needs archived and all this kind of stuff, that's like really deep into the guts of geocaching. And you're like, I don't follow what you guys are talking about. I don't get it. Fear not. We are going to have a series of episodes throughout the summer, starting soon, where we're going to introduce you to the basics of geocaching. We're going to get these experienced geocaching folks in our chat and those who follow us on social media to give their tips and advice. And we're going to help new geocachers to be able to understand some of these important topics, like how to communicate with your reviewers, how to properly place caches, how to play the game in a way that's going to cause the least amount of controversy for you and allow you to enjoy the game, because it's a game.
Oh, it is a game, isn't it?
Yes.
Some people take it much more than just a game.
Yep.
But alas, it is only a game.
Yeah. So what else do we have? Where do we?
You know what? I think we've beat this into the ground. Okay. Maybe we need to do a needs archive log for this episode.
There you go. So, hey, before we wrap it up, I just had one other thing. I threw a quick survey out on Twitter just before the podcast. I did. And the survey says, do you plan geocache maintenance or wait until you have to? And I didn't have a lot of responses on there, but of the responses I had, 50% said I plan cache maintenance. 25% said I wait until I have to, and another 25% said I kind of do both. And my fourth option was, what is cache maintenance? And nobody voted for that. So
good.
There you go. So at least they know.
Where's that poll? I'll go vote now.
So there you go. All right. Well, I think that's a podcast. What do you think, my friend?
I love it. Now, next week, we're going to do another podcast. I know. This is shocking, and this is breaking news. Next week, we're going to talk about DNFs. So you didn't find the cache. Now what? After that, hopefully you found the cache, we're going to help you manage all those caching stats that you have. Maybe there are a lot of DNFs and only 3 finds. Could be the other way around. But we'll figure all that out in a couple of weeks.
Sorry, pardon me. Absolutely. And that takes us a few weeks out to April 26th. We're going to have episode 248, and that's going to be Getting Started with Geocaching, Advice for Beginners. So, you know, what I promised earlier, we're going to be kicking that off April 26th. Then that wraps up April. We're into May, episode 249, and we are going to have friend of the show and caching friend of, I think, all of the hosts of this show, Goblin Dust, is going to join us. We're going to do a big events roundup of the stuff going on in the Northwest, including up here in British Columbia and everything. And that'll be our good friend Goblin Dust. He is fun to cache with.
Yes, he is. And he hosts some incredible events. We'll have him be able to talk about that. And, you know, some of his caches are the most highly favorited caches in the Northwest.
Yeah, absolutely. For very good reason. Awesome. So looking forward to having him on the show. So, folks, we want to thank our faithful Denali level supporters. That is Bounce Bounce, Team Squirrel, and WorldCaching.com. Thank you all three for everything you do to support us every month. We really appreciate that. If you want to know more about supporting the show, click that good old Patreon link on the CachingNW.com website. That was my tribute to my American co-hosts when I say good old. There you go. Because I think all American.
I like that, eh?
Yeah. There you go. Thank you. All right. Hey. We've got a new patron. I'm fresh off the presses. I'm seeing this in front of my face for the first time. That's awesome. So thank you, Curiosity Girl, for being a patron of the show. And I didn't take my deep breath to start this off, but you know, I'm gonna thank everybody. So starting with Curiosity Girl, B Pendragon, Broncos Fans for Life, Sprouter, Camp Clan, Tick Magnet, Kev Mac, D, Subway Mark, Dorimore, Dune Buddy, Kid Vegas 19, Geo Nav Pros, Wino, Seattle, Acker, Doc, OBS, Billy Robson, Nice, and Teus, Keats 94. Thank you, every single one of you guys.
It never gets old. I always want to see, can he make it? He's got a cold. Does he have the lung capacity today?
It's a head cold, so I'm okay.
Okay.
All right. But yeah, if it was a chest cold, I would have been toast. There's no way.
So until next week, where can listeners find us upon the big wide interwebs? Landmonkey, where can they find you?
Those big old wide interwebs. Well, the blog, landmonkey.blogspot.ca, that and our YouTube channel, which is you just search Landmonkey, LANMONKEY on YouTube. Both of those are due for some new content, so I'll be working on that over the weekend. But that's where you can find us. But you know where we're always active and posting content is Twitter, Instagram, and Periscope. You follow us at LandMonkeyGC. We'd love to have you follow us and post back to us and comment and let us know what you're thinking about. That'd be great. All right, Mr. of the Northwest, where do people find you?
Well, look for me on the big 4-lane highway in the internet worlds at Twitter and Facebook. Just look for Caching NW. Or better yet, head on over to cachingnw.com/hosts and read the bios and find all the links that we just mentioned. But you know what? Most of all, we want to say thank you. Thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode of Caching in the Northwest. Don't forget that you can be part of the show. Call 253-693-TFTC and leave us a comment, ask a question, or send us an extra log sheet any time of the day or night. Of course, you can always email us at feedback@cachingnw.com. Your support helps keep quality shows coming. If you like the show, please click the Patreon link on the cachingnw.com website, and I promise not to use that for bail. Or you can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and more. The show's produced by Chris Humphenauer and Jay Kennedy, hosted by Chris J. and Jim Paulwitz. The show's licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 3.0 license, copyright 2018 by Chris Sumner. And folks, every week, we encourage you to stay tuned for
The After Show.
Nice. Now, we have had some asked in the chat. That's for the after show. Those are topics that our loyal listeners want us to talk about in the after show. And you know what? We're not going to let them down.
Awesome.
So first of all, we start with Team Finn. And this is starting to get quite humorous now. It's been 4 weeks since I turned in my expository essay. It's not been graded yet. Our district, Kent, is slowly deteriorating. The people are calling for our superintendent's resignation. Help.
Oh, my goodness. Now, is that the essay we were all helping him on?
Yes.
On the show?
Yeah. And we don't know what kind of grade we've gotten. I mean, he's gotten. Wait. No, I think I had it right. We got.
Yeah. We helped him out. we all get a little bit of that grade.
So if he gets an A, we all get a little bit of it. He ends up with a C, right?
Yeah, well, it depends how many ways you split it, yeah.
Okay.
I think we just take his GPA and divide it equally amongst everybody. And
everybody fails. That's how communism works.
I think so.
And now we don't have any listeners in communist countries anymore. Sorry to burst your bubble. You hear that sound? That was the sound of their bubble bursting.
Hmm. That's what it was. Okay. You sure it wasn't this sound?
Team Finn, he's not okay with this. This is not a plan he's going for.
Oh, with the grades. Okay. Gotcha.
Oh, his dad says, I won't be happy if he gets a C. Oh, that's funny.
Statement is clearly made. All right, what else we got?
Subway Mark says this past week at on a McMinimums. That's it. McMenomina. I'm not going to get this now. You read it now.
All right. This past week on a Mc. Oh yeah. Okay. I can see why you're struggling with this. McMenamins.
Right.
This past week on a McMenamins passport run to Roseburg. Why would he even put that in there, Mark? That's just mean. Okay. I'm changing it. This past week on a Menominum passport run to Roseburg, I did a little cache maintenance. One had four DNFs. I was placing the new container when the original container was already there. Arg. Yes, I can see why.
Menomina.
No. Doesn't take much to get going on that. And doesn't take much to get Breiling going on it either.
We've got the entire song right there by Breiling in the...
And the senior of Team Finn.
Menomina. GeoNav Pros wants us to remember CacheCon.
I like the way you pronounce it. It sounds even more sophisticated than it is. It's good.
No, tell us about CacheCon.
I will gladly tell you about CacheCon. So CacheCon is... Oh, hold on one moment. Fill for me for a moment.
Does it have cache? Is it carrying weight? Is it what we think it is? Is this a convention about nothing more than caches?
It could be. It could be some of those things, but it's even more. So let me tell you, CacheCon is an event that is going on up here. It's the evolution of an event that's been going on for the past 3 or 4 years with the City of Richmond and the BC Geocaching Association and Metrovan Geocachers have been helping out as well. This year, we're formalizing the structure of the event a little bit more. We're actually having a variety of different speakers come in. We're having a presentation on outdoor first aid by an outdoor first aid specialist. So you're going to learn a little bit about doing first aid while you're out on the trails and hiking. We're going
Does someone need to be the volunteer to get the first aid done to them?
That's why you're coming, isn't it?
I am a klutz. I will need it anyway. So, okay, go ahead.
We're going to have, what else are we going to have? We're going to have speakers. We're going to have a botanist who's going to be speaking on identifying trees and plants while you're out hiking to give us tips and tricks about when you say that the cache is hidden in a Douglas fir, to make sure you actually know that it's a Douglas fir. Just teasing there because that's one of my pet peeves. But the point being, the botanist is going to tell us, they're going to have an hour presentation session where they're going to walk you out and show you a little bit about the trees and plants native to the Northwest here. It's going to be great. We're going to have volunteers from the Vancouver Photography Club who are going to be putting on a session about taking better pictures when you're outdoors and hiking and geocaching. So all kinds of great topics and more. So definitely check it out. I got to come up with the URL. I wasn't ready for that.
What's the date?
The date is May 6th. That's a Sunday. It's in Richmond at the Richmond Nature Park. It is, if you go on the geocaching.com website, it is there. So you can look on the calendar for May 6th. But here, let me just, where is it here?
May 6th, that's 1 month away.
It is. So it's coming up.
1 month and 1 day.
So if you go to, nope, that's not what I want. What the heck? Oh. I'm having problems here.
You're having problems? Thanks, Bob. but maybe you're looking up CacheCon. And it's CacheCon.
It could be. It's also that I'm trying to use a browser that's only a portion as wide as it needs to be for me to do this. So hold on. Let me use a different browser. It was up here. All right. So, in fact, if you Google CacheCon 2018, you will get a link to the meetup.com page for it. Which will get you to where you need to go. But if you also go to our link, which is for the site itself, which is going to get posted into the chat here as long as I can do it. Wait for it. It's coming. Which is, that's not the right. Okay, that's the link for the meetup. All right.
The BC CacheCon 2018.
BC
Geocaching beyond the traditional.
Yes, absolutely. Here we go. bccachecon.wordpress.com. So bccachecon, all one word, .wordpress.com is the site where you can go and you get all the information, including the agenda and the speakers and all that kind of stuff. And hey, something else we didn't talk about yet that's going to happen at CacheCon is we're going to do a live Caching in the Northwest show during the lunch break.
How come I didn't know about this?
There you go. Surprise.
I better go then.
So yeah.
How much does it cost to go to such an event that has so much cachet?
Well, it costs absolutely nothing.
Wait.
So there you go.
That can't be.
And thank you to Dora Moore who put the URL into the chat there while I was wasting time trying to find it myself. So yeah.
There you go.
bccachecon.wordpress.com.
Nice. So it's a free event, outdoor education, beautiful Richmond Nature Park, yeah, going beyond the traditional.
Yeah, all kinds of great stuff. It'll be fun.
Sunday, May 6th from 9 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. Love it.
Yeah. So come on out. If you're going to come, make sure that you do register for the event so that we know you're going to be there. We'd appreciate that a lot. Check out the website that we created. Everything that you need to know is on there.
And Dora Moore has done the math for us.
Okay.
That's $0 Canadian and $0 American.
Wow. So the exchange rate is actually even on this one.
Yeah. An even exchange rate on this one.
Mm-hmm. That's unusual. Very cool. All right. I think we've talked enough about CacheCon. What else do we've got?
I don't know. I thought that was it. Keats says, To reassure cashers and reviewers, I post an owner's maintenance log, even if my cache is in fine shape after I have checked up on it. To which Breitling says, Keats, that's how it's done.
Yeah, you got an attaboy there. Yeah, nice.
Oh, I missed the attaboy. Yes, I knew there was something else I was missing. Attaboy, that's how it's done.
That's a really good idea, because if you do that, as Keats has done, so even if your cache was fine, but you went out to go check on it, you post the owner maintenance log, it doesn't hurt you to do it. And what it does is it lets the reviewers know, yep, they checked on their cache. So if you get somebody who posts like a weird DNF or needs archived on your cache,
because I couldn't.
Right after you had posted an owner maintenance log, the reviewer's not going to take it too seriously.
Well,
they'll take it as seriously as they have to, but you know, there'll be some context.
And it tells the next cacher coming up that you've gone and looked at it, that you're responsive and hey, it's really there. Come out and find it.
Exactly.
So I think that's fabulous. I agree with Breitling. That's an attaboy.
Nicely done. All right. So one more Fatas I've got here.
Mm-hmm.
I think this one came from Keats. It says hashtag Fatas GC7 Juliet. What's W again?
Whiskey.
Juliet Whiskey, Romeo Juliet. Planetary Pursuit, Uranus, is on April 8th in Port Moody. Come on by and maybe share an FTF on the Lower Mainland's favorite nemesis cache, Skunk Tails, Sea Hag, GC599 X-Ray 6. So, you know, you can't hold an event specifically to go look for a cache, but there's an event on April 8th in Port Moody that just happens to be close to the longest unfound puzzle cache. I think it's the longest unfound one in the Lower Mainland now. So, you know, a whole group of people might go from the event and might head over to try and find that cache. And if you're there with them and they find it, you would be able to participate in a joint, a historic Metro Vancouver FTF event. But, you know, that's not what the event is for. The event is a Planetary Pursuit event about Uranus.
Sorry. I giggle every time.
Yeah.
I try not to.
Yeah, I mean, how can you not?
The Sea Hag cache, huh?
Yeah.
Love it.
Very nice.
Okay. Right. How are you doing on Planetary Pursuit? By the time we talk about this next week, it will have been done.
You know what? You're right. I can't remember what my score on Planetary Pursuit is, but it's pretty good. Let's see. View profile. Oh, nope. Shoot. Friend League. That's what I want. Friend League. Did you notice that they actually added a link in to Friend League? That's right. Right on the main page now?
No, I missed that.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, I did notice that. Yes, I did.
It's just underneath where you'd click to go view your profile on the left-hand side in the list of different options. Now there's a Friend League link. That's new. That was added very immediately after they started this Planetary Pursuit.
By the way, you have 1,997 points.
I do. But I'm not top of my Friend League anymore.
That's a lot of points.
I was, but I'm getting my butt kicked by Furfaces LL from Australia, who has 2730. That's insane.
I am.
So congrats, Furfaces. If you're listening, congrats. Nice work.
I have to admit, I did a little bit of, some people would call it cheating, but it's well within the rules.
Oh, in fact, Northwest, you dropped a whole bunch of trackables into an event, didn't you?
Yeah. And pulled it back out. I went to one event during this entire time. I haven't found any caches. And I did it as a joke. Look, see? There, I can catch up with you.
I'd also like to just point out for the record that in my Friend League, where I have that score that you mentioned earlier, that puts me in my Friend League in position 2. I was in position 1 until recently, but I'm in position 2. If I scroll down and further down, and then a lot further down, I eventually get to position 26 in my friend league. And that's Rock Chalk, who likes to, you know, give me a bit of a hard time sometimes. So I just want to point out that while technically he has gained his souvenirs, he seems to basically just cash to the point where he can get his souvenirs and given up. So I'm kind of disappointed. I would have expected a little bit more from a lackey, a little more passion about the game.
Now, you only need 500 points, am I right?
You only need 500 points. So he barely got the points he needs just to get it. I guess he just wanted his souvenirs. He didn't really want to do much more cashing.
Okay.
Kind of sad.
Hmm.
I'm a little disappointed.
Well, I don't know if you heard that sound. That was the gauntlet being dropped for Rock Chalk.
It's a lot easier to do when you have your own podcast. I'll just tell you that.
Ouch.
Oh, fun. All right. Well, I think that wraps up the after show. What do you think?
I agree. Okay. I just want to toss in that Dora Moore says she's done a lot of 5-point caches. I feel like I've really worked hard for this one.
Yeah. That's the way it goes sometimes. We have a lot of 5-point caches in our points total, but we did some geo art as well, which really, really helped. So, So there you go. As long as you're having fun, right?
Exactly. That's what the whole thing's about.
Awesome. Well, get out there and have fun, you guys. Get out there, go geocaching, cache safely, cache often. And Chris?
Until next week, get out and get caching in the Northwest.